I was going through this book I read 20 years ago called The Power of Now. And two sentences right at the start struck me. This is in the introduction itself, where Eckhart Tolle says, "But even the most beautiful experiences come and go. More fundamental, perhaps, than any experience is the undercurrent of peace that has never left me since then." So he doesn't say the undercurrent of an experience, the undercurrent of peace that has never left me since then. Sometimes it is very strong, almost palpable, and others can feel it too. At other times, it is somewhere in the background, like a distant melody. So, in our quest for enlightenment, the self, the purpose of life, one could conclude that if it was authentic and we reached our goal, which we set for ourselves, the outcome would be peace. And if the outcome is not peace, something as simple as peace, then we must question that quest. Because imagine having the ultimate spiritual experiences, but still, I can't navigate daily living and the anxieties, conflicts, troubles, then what is the value of that experience? So we can agree that the quest is for peace, in other words. And the second line, which confirms this, enlightenment is a state of wholeness, of being at one, and therefore at peace. So simple. So, you may be pursuing any spiritual path, any spiritual teaching, any master, but the question has to be asked: am I more at peace now than I was before? That is the only measure. Now, there are those who are drawn to living teachers and masters, those who have taken a master who they have never met as their master, whatever it may be. But if I am with a specific master, this question I have to ask myself. When the master is not in the body anymore, being close to the master's teaching, the master's presence, is it giving me peace? And this can only happen with an open mind. If one's mind is not open, if one thinks one's master is the greatest and the best, one shuts off from a field of infinite potential, because the master is one appearing in many forms. So to have that humility and be open and receptive, it helps. Over the years, I have had so many instances where people have come here. Why? They have their guru, they have their master, whether it is Sai Baba, whether it is Meher Baba, whether it is Neem Karoli Baba, whether it is the mother of Pondicherry. But those people are convinced that their master has brought them here. Because sometimes the truth is expressed in a relatable way, perhaps, in a different way, to deepen one's understanding. So there's no conflict. But because they are open, they follow their intuition. The message is the same because the truth is only one. The truth is only one. Now, what is this truth which is only one? My teacher would say it is the impersonal awareness of being. Sounds quite complex. The impersonal awareness of being. What does it mean? Simply that if there was no memory of you as a person, supposing with amnesia your memory was wiped out completely, you could not recognize anyone, the awareness of being would still exist. Because you know you are existing, but there is no person anymore. The impersonal awareness, I'm aware, I know I exist, of being, not becoming, not has been, because has been and becoming is the person, pure being. Now, we are in a cosmic trap because whatever we are viewing in life, the situation we are in, the people we are dealing with, is through our filters. Our conditioning. Conditioning is the past. all the collection of thoughts since day one and experiences of life which shaped me become my conditioning. And I view the person in front of me or the situation in front of me on the basis of that filter. So you could say that we are viewing the present through the past. As a person, we are viewing the present through the past because we are built that way, which basically means that we are viewing the present as the past because our reference is the past. So we are in the moment living in the past, and in the future we are living in the past. So we are all living in the past. All our lives till our last breath, we will be living in the past. No present, no future. Which basically means we are living past lives. Isn't it absurd? It's really absurd. So what does this mean in daily living? If I have a point of view, I lose sight of the fact that it is only a point of view. It is not the truth. Why? The truth is the impersonal awareness of being. A point of view is a person's point of view, my point of view, which is just a point of view. It is not the truth. But in life, in daily living, I act as if it is the truth. I am right and this is the truth. And then I tell others that your point of view is wrong, my point of view is right. That is what we do. Because we are living through our point of view, which is shaped by our past. The truth has no point of view. The human being has a point of view. So that human being who realizes that my point of view is just a point of view, lives a life of ease and lightness. It does not mean they don't have a point of view. They are designed to have a point of view. But they are no longer identified with their point of view, that this is me. And any threat to my point of view is a threat to me. The enlightened person does not live that way. He is willing to give up his point of view at the drop of a hat, because sticking to a point of view makes one suffer. So we start living a life more and more of conscious presence. While being conditioned by the past, we suspend our attachment to it. We say, all right, let's see what happens. We become more open. We become open to criticism rather than reacting to it and taking offense, because the ego loves to take offense, because now it knows this is me. I am the one taking offense. Now we are open to criticism, and we may find ourselves telling the person that maybe you have a point of view, let me consider it and give it a thought. Most of us do that in any case. While we may react to the person criticizing us, we question ourselves later. Are we really like that? Is what the person is saying right? You see, this is the journey of the death of the me. And that is why Maharaj said, be careful, be sure you want to be on it, because it will burn the house down. The house of walls, separation, beliefs, ideas, concepts, any teaching which does not point to the death of the me is not a valid teaching. The reason we are drawn to satsang, to spiritual teachings, is because at some level we have realized this material world is of no value beyond pleasure in the moment. It is not lasting. It is transient. There are too many ups and downs. And so that inner quest, what is life about? That is the inner awakening. And life is about the death of the me. So that when that dies, life is lived fully. The time on earth that is allocated to me, I live fully through conscious presence, conscious being, seeing how events come to me unasked. How I deal with them, how I handle them, how I interact with people, closest family, people who don't really matter to me. What does it reveal to myself? Because whatever I think about people, no matter who they may be, is a dialogue going on in my consciousness, not the other. That is the joke. We don't realize that. Everything is within. There is no without only. There is no without. The kingdom of God is within me. So, I must resolve my conflicts in my own consciousness. It's really not to do with the external world. Internally, am I resolving them? This means realizing the self, the one self with a capital S, which is very simply put, the one behind the many. If a person gives you 50 lakhs, you are very happy. And if a person makes you invest 50 lakhs in the market and you lose it overnight, you are sad. So you love the person who gave you 50 lakhs and you hate the person due to which you lost 50 lakhs. And you live your life like this. The sage knows that the first 50 lakhs was meant to come to him by the will of God. And that person was an instrument through whom it came. Because the sage is not having individual relationships with people, his relationship is with God. And he knows God operates through everyone. Likewise, the person whose advice he took and lost 50 lakhs, he knows this 50 lakhs was destined to be lost. And because of that, I had to take this person's advice, which turned out to be terrible. Now, this sense of neutrality means the sage will not love the person who gave him 50 lakhs more than the other. The sage is not a fool. Before taking this person's advice again on the stock market, he may think twice. Apply his mind and intellect. Daily living. But because the sage sees the hand of God above both, he will not withdraw his love and his blessings to the one who has caused him loss. This is what we do. We withdraw love. We are experts at withdrawing love. It's very simple. Take three friends who have wished to on your birthday. And 1 year, one friend forgets. You will say, I'm not going to wish this person on them. Withdrawing love. Why? Because you did something which hurt me. This kind of dialogue does not exist for the sage because the sage's nature is love. If the feeling arises to wish someone, it is expressed. So it's really not a quest of being a better human being. But you're still a human being. It is a quest for being at peace, which is the absence of that human being who judges human beings as good or bad. It is the annihilation of personhood, the son of God, the daughter of God, as if as God, Archangel Michael, Michael, as God. And the sword is the sword of the intellect, cutting through the illusion of separation, the Maya. The illusion is so tempting, it comes in so many forms. But having that awareness so that we don't fall into the past patterns, that is the journey. And not as a punishment, but recognizing when something happens in my life, and especially something which happens repeatedly, is certainly trying to teach me a lesson. Recognizing it, not admonishing myself, oh, again I failed. Just being more and more aware that this pattern is repeating. Forget the why. Just witnessing the pattern itself is enough. Because I have created a distance in the witnessing. And when you are open to someone else's point of view, you will find yourself saying, I see your point of view. Because you know now that if you were in that person's shoes, with their conditioning, their background, you would say the same thing as them. So there is no right or wrong point of view anymore. Rather than opposing it immediately, I see your point of view, but this is my point of view. That's the spirit of cooperation, of felt oneness with being, not of resisting and opposing. which makes the other person see, feel so comfortable, not rejected. We know, because we have been rejected, how it feels to be rejected. It hurts, but we love hurting others. So the words we use, the things we say, becomes now so aligned with the person who's in front of us. We allow them to express themselves fully before replying. Earlier, we never did that. We would not give them a chance to finish what they are saying. Now we allow it, and we allow ourselves to think differently than we did earlier. We allow ourselves this freedom to change our own minds because we are no longer rigid. I mentioned this earlier, one therapist in the US, when she told me, because in therapy you can have specialties. She said, I specialize in trauma. I said, you will be the most successful therapist, because who has not seen trauma? Birth itself is trauma. 9 months in the womb in darkness is a traumatic time. And most of us are born crying trauma. Buddha said it, samsara is dukkha. He didn't say it's joyful living. But through life, through daily living, what joy can I discover? That joy which does not depend on me buying something nice and expensive for myself, giving me a nice holiday. Those are pleasures which are fleeting. What is that joy, no matter what income group I belong to, what background I come from, which I can say is mine? Through the suffering, through the samsara, through the pleasures and pains, there is only one joy which stands on its own. And that is the joy of being. Still, nothing takes away what I feel when I watch the sunset over the sea, when I look at a tree, when I'm enjoying small things in life, no matter what challenges I have been given. I know that small thing touches me. What is that? We all know that. For different people, it's different things. And so when I stop living in the past, the poor me syndrome, and I discover conscious presence, I do become more joyful. But that is a joy which does not have highs and lows. It is not that joy. That joy is the discovery of the nature of life and living and people. That is the joy. Would anyone like to share something or ask something? Yes, Seema.
When you were talking about peace, the quotation that came to my mind at that time, I think it's from the Bible only. The peace that surpasses
understanding.
So could that be explained further?
That is all what I've spoken about. Means you are not using your mind to reach peace. When you realize I have very little control over life, most of it doesn't make sense, it surpasses understanding. You're not trying to understand all this anymore. So that peace that surpasses understanding is a peace that can never leave you. It is such a deep peace. Understanding means the mind. So that peace is the annihilation of the thinking mind. In that sense, it surpasses understanding. Now you are at peace with whatever happens in life. I may not like it, certain things, but I am at peace with what is, even if it is pain.
So could we say it's just acceptance?
You could say that. A complete and total acceptance of what is. I could say it as the total acceptance of the will of God. Doesn't make sense, especially when I see injustice being done or something bad happening to me. But I no longer spend time in analyzing it, because that analysis I've given up now. I know outcomes are not in my control. I can do my best. Then whatever has to happen will happen. So a total acceptance of what is. It's the same thing. You see, because what does it mean? When there's a total acceptance, the personhood is not there. The person is the one who resists, and the mind gets troubled. The thinking mind starts really doing cartwheels. So when there's a total acceptance, the thinking mind is at rest. The working mind will kick in, What can I do about the situation? A, B, C, D. By all means, that functions far more beautifully because it is not overlaid by the thinking mind. It functions in its purity.
You do what you have to do and accept.
And leave this earth when it's your time.
What else can you do?
Exactly. But if you're moping, whining while you're living, then you are doing something which is unjust to yourself. Forget others. Not that we can help it. Sometimes we are lost in our depression and negativity because of life's experiences. But when this quest for the truth begins, and I firmly believe this, Jimmy, because my teacher would say it, never consider your glass half empty, consider it half full. Because the fact is, very few people are drawn to spiritual teachings compared to the population. And that step can only happen by the will of God. So you are not alone from the start. Yes, it may happen in different ways. Someone may read a book, someone's friend may say, hey, come, let me take you to this talk or meet this person or whatever it is, or an experience of life. Different strokes for different folks. But once that begins, it is not going to lose momentum.
When we accept something,
when we accept something, you know, happening and accept it, and the thoughts stop immediately. Yes. With this thing happens with me, no thought. Now let it happen. So it's so beautifully things happen.
That means you're living it.
Yeah, definitely.
Or rather, it is being lived through you. It is being lived through you. And only gratitude can arise for that.
Yes.
Because there's no thought, no good thoughts, no bad thoughts. Only thing, acceptance, and just look at him. Theek hai, jo ho raha hai, very good. It's happening for my best. And it always is for the best.
Even when it's not for the best, it's for the best.
Most of the time, it's for the best.
No, sometimes it doesn't make sense. Like someone who has seen a lot of setbacks and loss, if we tell that person it all happens for the best, it's putting salt on an open wound. But for that person to realize, you know, it happened, I received an email, I think last week, about alcoholism. And this person wrote, I don't know, was it an email or where? Anyway, he said not only one member of the family, three members were alcoholic and he had to deal with that. So, but the realization, this was my lot, has given him peace and he could manage himself through it. So that realization that in spite of circumstances, and what cards I have been dealt with, I have found my peace. That is so beautiful. Because see, we all have been dealt different cards. We have suffered in different ways. And some certainly have been destined to suffer more than others. We don't know the cosmic law. There's no point asking why questions. But no matter what cards I have been dealt with, if the opportunity is presented that, hey, there is something which is giving me peace no matter what circumstances I find myself in, then not to let go of that, hold on to it. Like Meher Baba would say, hold on to my daman or whatever. Just hold it is enough to take you out of it. But that much we have to do. And we know it for ourselves that some teachings may not make sense to us, but we are drawn to it. So we have to trust our own knowing and keep the mind aside a bit.
We help those who are those depressed.
We can try our best, depending on what we think and feel we should do. But we must have the knowing that we may try, but the outcome is not in our hands. Because you see, if we push, we are invested in an outcome. If we accept the will of God that everyone has come with their destinies, if I feel like trying, someone may not. Someone may just keep quiet. Someone may feel like trying. By all means, that has to be honored. But what will happen is there will be a relaxation in your effort. So the approach changes. You will not push too hard. You will know your own limitations. You will know I can only do this much. And then hope that things improve.
Especially when the people you're trying to help are young and helpless.
Sure. And that is why there are many therapists and specialists who are now there. These roles were not there 30, 40 years ago. They are now there to help such people. So by all means, and when one can't do anything, be there as pure being for them, as pure presence. It's very comforting when you are down in the dumps to have just a presence who does not judge you next to you. In fact, I think it is of more value. There are so many times I have seen people will come with a certain problem or situation and speak their heart out, and I'm just listening to them, and they get their own resolutions and answers and they leave happily. Because you see, sometimes we just, when we ourselves are externalizing our issue, we find our own solutions. So I don't take being the witnessing presence lightly. Goldsmith put it in another way. He said, being the witnessing presence, the error falls away on its own. The error, the misperceptions dissolve because they've just been brought to presence. For that person who has found deep peace, just being peaceful is the blessing to the other. That person didn't do anything to improve the other's life. And so you can imagine, we should be so grateful for the peaceful people, not only in our lives. We may be at a restaurant or at the airport and there may be one who is at peace. That is a blessing. That is the greatest gift we can give to the universe, is to be at peace ourselves. For me too. I am blessed by all of y'all.
Yeah, I'm so blessed.
You are blessed by only one body-mind organism. I am blessed by so many. So I have an ulterior motive. Yes, Rupa.
So, one thing was that, am I at peace more and more? And am I able to look at my past? Though I may not be able to do much thing about it, but that is very clear. It's that I have become much more peaceful over the period of years in this. The other thing which was that we have lived many lives and many masters. So few days or few months back, I was thinking that we need to focus on Mother or Aurobindo. And now I feel that, having had a lot of experience and having read some things from where even Ramakrishna and Aurobindo appeared together, I feel that that wideness or vastness is not to be restricted. Yes. That was the second. Third thing about, so many times when you read the newspaper, you read some articles and things, you get disturbed. Of course, that things will arise. And then you ask, what is that you can do? And the beautiful answer which I was trying to articulate is that if you can't do anything much more, then be at peace yourself. Be full of love and light. Even bringing the light from above and consecrating it into a peace and love would actually change things. That's what the Himalayan masters do ultimately. They guide you through their presence rather than it. And ultimately doing whatever is being done, offer it as you are not a doer of it.
Yeah. You know, my teacher once gave this example. At his time, there was the Kargil war going on, and he asked himself this question one evening: what can I do? I'm not a soldier. I feel so bad seeing those coffins which are returning. What can I do? Next morning, he saw in the Times of India a full page ad for some Prime Minister's relief fund for the Kargil soldiers. Promptly, he got up, wrote out a check, sent it, and he said, I did what I thought I should do, and that was it, finished. So if we find we can do something, we do it. If not, like you said, be at peace.
I was trying, I used to do a lot of things on the medical front in everything. Sometimes now it becomes, but now I'm more at peace at trying that whatever I tried indeed, that is being followed by others, things are happening, things are changing, and everyone has its own destiny. You can't change the destiny of other things, but what you can do is you can assist them on that journey. That's the most thing, and be at very peace yourself. So this time something arose, like my mother got a dementia and everything. She was in a very violent state. And I felt, I was also disturbed because of it. But then I prayed to the God that at least I can take her to the doctor, because she was refusing food, everything. Now at least I see the grace that she is ready to take medicine and some food that may help her soul journey. And that is what I pray for now. But there's nothing else which we can do about it.
Precisely.
So finding that peace, and but it's very difficult.
It is. That is the peace that passeth understanding.
Yeah, because when I read about mother or the other people, they said that the peace mother got when she landed at Pondicherry, that never left her. For us, it leaves fleetingly. But then, even in that condition, I say that we are more at peace than where we began from.
That is it. You will only know when you compare it with the past.
Yeah.
Am I more at peace now than I was before?
One thing about Ramesh Ji which I remember is that whatever happens, it could have still been a worse outcome. So when I look at that sentence where he said that it could have been worse, that example, when that person said that his friend comes and says that our friend Peter was shot. It could have been worse. I said, why? Because if he had discovered me the last night, I would have been shot. So that's how things have to be taken. Like, you have to have this thing where you can look at peace, but being cheerful is also very important. And I think most of our lives have gone in past living. It's when the best way is to let go of the past, whether it is through your own theory of karma, astrology, this, that, all this conditioning has to ultimately leave you.
True. If we find ourselves too reactive to people in our life, it is a sign we are living in the past. If we find ourselves taking offense very easily, we are living in the past. And we are cemented to our identity. And then we start playing the victim, the poor me. People have done this to me, behaved like this with me, said this to me.
And it is only when we try and leave the past is that we can focus on creating a future.
You could say that. You could say that.
So I was thinking of why I lost money or something. It's better that I start thinking, how can I make more money, or I can be more happy, more peaceful.
Maybe. And then you must have told yourself, at least I didn't lose other
things. Yeah.
It goes back to what Ramesh Ji would say, right? Your happiness only depends on one thing, your attitude.
Your attitude to life, to whatever happens in life, your attitude to the other, and to what it.
Yeah, and he crystallized this like again and again and again. Like he would say it.
Yeah, and he was condemned to be too simplistic because of that, but it boils down to that. People wanted the higher vocabulary and words and all that, which later on in his life, he just dropped all of that. Experiences, states of samadhi, nirvikalp samadhi, sahaj samadhi, kevalya nirvikalp samadhi, sahaj this, that. Either that's all that drama, or levels of consciousness, which plane of consciousness are you in? How much of the people's aura can you see? I can see 1 foot, 2 feet, 3 feet. You can see only 1 inch. Very bad. I have experienced all this. You have come here before, right? What is your name?
Tanmay.
Tanmay.
So as you were speaking, something in me triggered and I was feeling very overwhelming in my body. Unpleasant sensations. So this happens in day-to-day life as well, when I'm doing something and something gets triggered, and I know for a fact that in life, like I have to take some action. And as you said, you should do what you can and then surrender. But at the same time, because of these emotions, I sometimes am not able to take that action because I know I should take that action. And then there's that guilt that why am I not able to do it?
But what action? I mean, what can you explain this a bit more?
So like if with respect to career, anything that I have to do, like take any decisions specifically, and because of these overwhelming emotions or triggers at times, not all the time, but they come in bits. So if I have to take any decision and then obviously surrender, but at the first step itself, I'm not able to focus and do that properly at times.
You're not able to take a decision,
let's say, yeah.
So it's good, because when in doubt, don't. There is no compulsion to take a decision at that moment. Better to have the emotional body calm down, keep a gap, and then take a decision more objectively. Now, you are aware that things are happening within when you are triggered. Most of us get triggered and we are not aware of it also. Ask any therapist, they'll tell you this, that awareness is the first step. Am I right?
Yes. Yes.
No, because there are therapists sitting here. But everyone seems to be a therapist. You know, like they say, in a room full of mad people, you'll go mad. So I have all therapists here. So, to even be aware of the triggers is a gift. Now, to cooperate with it, to become friends with it, rather than see it as a problem, to understand it, maybe to speak to someone, it is a big gift. And as he said rightly, you start viewing things as it could have been worse. And here I am saying that the awareness itself is the master key, because we are living unconscious lives mostly. To be conscious of something is a very huge step. To be conscious of your pain and what triggers the pain is a very big step. Make no mistake. That is the gift you have been given. And usually, the human experience is to be triggered by what people do and what they say. The foundation is doership, or what I have done in the past for which I feel guilty or shameful, and I've condemned myself or I've condemned others. That is why the pivot of this teaching is on doership, because when that is resolved, everything collapses. All the mental constructs collapse, and that is the pivot of the Bhagavad Gita. And there is a mantra which works beautifully. I relax and release. I relax and release. What brings you here? Were you visiting Bombay or? Oh, you reached this morning?
Back.
Missing me? No, they are coming up.
This year.
Yeah, November, and November is Dharamshala. And
regarding February.
Yes, that has to be booked so much in advance, unfortunately, so we announced it. And maybe we'll try one in the monsoon if it works out somewhere in July. But good, you didn't know, otherwise you would not have come. All well?
Life is full of trouble.
What to do?
Yeah.
That is the mantra. What to do? You also in Bombay?
Yeah, I just came for your satsang.
No, you must have been in India, right?
Yeah, I'm Pune. So I just came for the.
Do you came alone or with these?
No, I came with the
Puneris.
His friend. So I taken their number and then.
I see.
So I knew that they come regularly. So today I said, God made it happen for me.
I'm in Pune next weekend.
Yeah,
God willing.
God willing. Looking forward.
Same here. The joke is we live in the past, but our eyes look forward. God did give us eyes at the back. Crazy, is it? Absolutely crazy. Every night we should go to sleep with this thought. It is absolutely insane. My friend Rohit would say batshit insane. We are living in the past, but no I is in the past.
So I feel like we don't even use our senses when we're living in the past, because only our mind is...
Yeah, totally.
You know, like our eyes are not even looking. We're like here mostly, and everything is missed.
Everything is missed. Everything is missed.
And that's why this presence feels so sweet, if I could put it that way, because you really start like feeling everything, sensing everything when you're not in the mind.
Yeah, so true. And people, you start sensing people and feeling people. And the mind misguides you about people, but this sensing is very authentic. You can sense a person before they speak.
My name is Naushin, and I've come here for the first time with my sister. So,
who's your sister?
Nawal.
Oh, she dragged you here, basically.
So she was telling me this since a very long time, that come with me. But there was no good day that I found to come. But there are certain things happening around me which are not going good. So one fine day I got up and she's like, you come with me once, at least try. So I'm feeling very good after coming here. The only thing that I want to ask you is, I'm a very easily triggered person. Okay, and I'm aware about it. But I feel it is very important for me to respond to those triggers. Like if somebody tells me something and it makes me uncomfortable or a sense of pain once if a person says me anything. So I get easily triggered and I feel like I have to give it back. And if I don't give it back, it's like a thing in my heart which or mind, it keeps on going on that.
You have to express yourself. Yeah.
So if I don't, it is very irritating for me at times and I feel very troubled and like it's somewhere eating me from inside that I've not said it, but it also gets me into trouble if I say it. So it's a thing that how do I control myself from not reacting, because eventually I feel that I'm getting troubled because of it.
So, Naushin, right?
Yeah.
You have used two words. You first use the word responding and now you use the word reacting. When we are triggered and we find it very important to immediately give back, we are 99% reacting. When our button is pushed and we react, that is not a response. That is a knee-jerk reaction. We are on autopilot. There is no problem with responding. But when you respond, there is a gap. It is not a knee-jerk reaction. It is not a pushback. It is not a giving back. See, when I take something very personally, that this person said this to me, they did it, I feel the need to push back and react and pull out my guns also. This teaching is inviting you to look at this game, that what you are doing, so to speak, is it a reaction or is it a response? A response is that which does not have the emotional charge which a reaction has. So, is what I am saying very emotional and reactive? I have to ask myself. So, a person who feels like responding must certainly respond, because otherwise it is held back. But you might be mistaking the two. And then if you start asking yourself, you don't have to read books, you don't have to do anything. What is my reaction based on? Let that happen. It's not going to change overnight. But at the end of the day, I choose one instance where I reacted, whether it is a family member or friend or whatever. I sit by myself. If I enjoy my cup of tea, I have my cup of tea and I say, okay, I reacted to this, what this person said. Why did I react? Because they said what they said. I will find, when I investigate this, I reacted because they said something to me which I didn't like. Now, who is this me? A bundle of thoughts, conditioning from day one, which I had no control over. But I have taken it so personally what this person has said. And this person also has said what they have no control over saying, because they were conditioned that way. By and by, this starts revealing itself. And then I start noticing a change. When I see this whole load of this burden I've been carrying, people are targeting me, so I'm triggered, I'm easily triggered. We are all easily triggered. But when I start asking, who is it that is easily triggered? That is the spiritual journey. That is the journey of self-discovery. Why am I triggered? what is in me that is triggered? Is it a misconception of people being responsible for their actions, including me? So I start exploring without judging. This is what starts happening. This is the spiritual journey. I don't judge myself either for being triggered. But I will notice by and by when this is resolved, when I start accepting what is, accepting the will of God, seeing that everyone is an instrument shaped by their conditioning, including myself, I start finding reactions are lessening, crumbling down, and I'm responding more and more to people and situations. Definitely, rather than repressing, one must speak out if one feels the need to. But by and by, the words I say when I react might change. When this starts, I would say, welcome to the spiritual journey. All right. It's actually not a burden, the spiritual journey. It reveals. You'll start looking forward to it. That is why so many on the spiritual path start losing their friend circle, because it does not interest them anymore. Welcome to the club. But you'll make new friends. You'll meet people you would never meet before. Everything starts changing. Better it changes gradually than suddenly. Baby steps. Because when you take baby steps, you're more stable. Even the mother has said this. Better gradual than sudden. It's just like wealth. Better to get wealth gradually than suddenly. Because when it comes suddenly, you don't know how to handle it. And you may make mistakes. Yes, Prashant, you've come from Nagpur or you were in Pune?
Yes, sir.
Something must be in the planets today that all these people are here. Who's studying astrology, anyone?
Sir, after plans.
Huh?
Apne case.
We are in an intense time, an intense period of time. Might get more intense. And therefore, peace and being present is that much more important. We have to be careful on the spiritual path because we tend to absorb people's vibrations, whether they are fear-based, negative, opinionated. It's a testing time. The time to come is a testing time for those on the spiritual journey.